No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Today, we're going to do something a little different. Tonight, we're going to do something a little different. Usually, Kathleen is joining us from the lovely state of Arizona, but tonight, she's right here in Washington, D.C. We're in the same room together. We've called in security to keep us separate in the case that a fight breaks out. But what we're going to do is, since this, we've been on the air since April, we're going to review some of the stuff that we've gone over for the last 8 months. And next week, on next week's show, we're going to introduce a new format, slightly new format, and talk about the year to come. But tonight, we want to talk about the year gone by. It's hard to believe it's 2014, huh, Kathleen?
Yes, it does. And hello to our audience. I am back in the same room with the senator. It's definitely different. There's a line cross over here. You stay on your side, okay? I'm going to stay over here on mine. I want to acknowledge that hopefully there's two new listeners, and I'm going to test them later, because if they fail the test, then I'm going to go over to their house and stay for a couple of days. So that's Bobby and Joanne, and I won't use their last name so that I don't incriminate them.
Well, I just want you to know that one of us is on the left side of the line and the other one's on the right. And you can guess who's who, but I think you already know.
I'm kind of in the middle. You know, I'm on the rational side. So there we go.
Yeah.
No, well, you know, I was just saying, sorry to interrupt you, but I was just saying that, remember when it was 1999 and the year 2000 came and planes were going to fall out of the sky and everything was going to crash? And that's been 14 years ago, and I remember that really well.
Yeah, I do too. I got to go and see Desmond Tutu give a speech and go to a service that he performed on New Year's Eve in the year 2000. It was really, really great. A lot of entertainment, and he presided at the National Cathedral. So it's something I'll never forget. But yeah, I remember that. Nobody's computer was supposed to work. Everything was going to come to an end. But here we are 14 years later.
Exactly.
Didn't happen. And I think people have been calling for doomsday since the very first New Year's Eve. So
it's strange to be able to see you. That's for sure.
And speaking of doomsday, let's start. Can we start with gun control?
Oh, gosh. Yes. All right. Let's start. We just had a big argument earlier. I'm kind of worn out. But yes, let's go over gun control.
Well, we don't need to start there. But I thought it was a good place, mostly because we did have a big argument. And I was right and you were wrong, even though you won't admit it. And you know what? I think there are probably people out there that agree with Kathleen, which is scary, but you people should call in and let us know how you feel.
Exactly. Because I really think that the senator and people in D.C. need to get a reality check sometimes, because you guys are in a bubble here. I mean, you don't understand that the policies that you put forth don't always kind of cross over those state borders and actually act the way that you guys think they do. So I wish that people would call so they can back me up and explain to the senator, you know, some of the reasons why gun control is not necessarily maybe the best way to go about it, or certain aspects of gun control. I mean, I think we both agree background checks are good, right?
Right, absolutely. But and 90% of America agrees with that as well. So most gun owners agree with that.
Yeah, and that's a survey done by who again?
I don't know who did the I see that figure quoted all the time. I think it was an ABC poll, but I'm not sure. But they polled 90 and they polled Americans regardless of their political background or whether or not they own guns, and like 89.7% of the respondents believed in background checks of some sort. But unfortunately, my colleagues, if you want to call them that, in the United States Senate were pusillanimous and refused to pass legislation just recently. They refused to pass legislation calling for background checks.
Well, explain to me also, this is a big thing about statehood, about how these guys always play with your laws and stuff in D.C. And you said that you guys have some of the strictest gun laws in the nation, probably maybe along with New York City or something like that. But you're telling me, and one of the discussions we had is I said that I had heard that D.C., they might pass legislation that ban guns, right? And then when that happens, right, Everyone's supposed to turn in their gun to the government?
Well, that really is propaganda. I mean, there's never been ever a law in the District of Columbia that's outlawed guns. We had very, very tough laws, which required that, for example, that if you had a handgun, that it be registered, that you kept it in with a trigger lock on it all the time, that it needed to be unloaded, that the ammunition could not be kept with a gun. Someone sued all the way to the Supreme Court, a guy named Heller. And in the recent Heller decision, this is one of the biggest things that's happened in gun control in a long time. But in 2009, the Supreme Court decided that the law in the District of Columbia was in fact unconstitutional. So we've been required to make new gun laws, and the city has been working on them for a while now. And that may be why some people think that there's going to be a ban on guns, but we can't ban guns. You have a constitutional right under the Second Amendment to have a firearm. And we can't ban them altogether. So that's just never going to happen. Not here or anywhere else.
But it takes like $1,000 and months and months and months of paperwork and going through all these classes to get a gun or to get a shotgun, right? Because you can't have a handgun.
No, my understanding is that anybody in the District of Columbia can own a shotgun. All they have to do is register it with the local police department. Okay. But they can't. They have to take it in and have it registered, but they can't own any other type of weapon as of now. In fact, I think you can own handguns now in the district, but there are no handgun dealers. There are no gun dealers in the district.
So you have to go to Virginia or Maryland to get your guns.
Yeah. And that makes it somewhat more complicated, but that complication is due to the fact that the laws are being rewritten. It's not something that we put into law that you need to work around. It's that we haven't established gun dealers in the District of Columbia yet. I think there's one and he hasn't opened, and I don't know what the bureaucratic holdup is.
So hold on. If you never had any laws that were ban on guns, then why are you just now getting dealers? That doesn't make any sense. If you get a gun,
no, we've had a lot of gun control laws, but we've never had a law that prohibits you from owning a gun. You can always own a shotgun.
But you just said that you didn't have any gun dealers. That you just are getting one now. I mean, somebody's just opening shop now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean if you had laws that allowed you to have guns, why weren't there dealers before this? Why are they?
It probably wasn't very profitable. We don't really have a lot of guns in District of Columbia. You know, I mean, we have a lot of illegal guns. Don't get me wrong. There are a ton of guns that come in. We certainly have lots of murders with guns, including automatic and semi-automatic weapons and all sorts of weapons that are banned. And the problem there is that even though we have some of the toughest gun laws in the country, Virginia, which is literally 10 minutes drive from downtown Washington, has some of the loosest gun laws in the country. So we get plenty of guns, but we don't have any gun dealers that I know of.
Well, and this is a whole, like, it just gets very complicated because some people argue, well, then what is the use in having these laws that are very, you know, some of the toughest, and yet you have a state that's lenient. So how, you know, how does that make sense? And so why would you want stricter laws or laws that are strict as it is when you have a state that it's so loose? I mean, why put laws there that's kind of hard to follow through with?
Well, that, again, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that we have laws that are hard to follow through with. I think we had a very simple law. But that law, but all that whole system of gun control that we had went out the window with the Heller decision. They said it was unconstitutional. So we can't have laws that are unconstitutional, and we have to develop new ones. So in a way, we're in our infancy as far as this goes. And, of course, the people in the District of Columbia, as I told you earlier, they did a survey that shows 70% of the people in the district thought we had good gun laws when they were considering the Heller decision. So you have a community that's not necessarily pro-gun to begin with, and you have a very old system that's being revamped, and that's what is causing a lot of the confusion right now. And, of course, as everybody knows, this is a hot-button issue. And, you know, I'm the last one to be a hypocrite. I believe that you have to be honest. And I think that, you know, we have to point out that we just had a mass shooting at the Navy Yard, and the guy that did it with a shotgun. I mean, you don't need a semi-automatic weapon to kill several people. He managed to do it with a shotgun. So I think shotguns are safer. They're harder to carry around. They make sense. I think the National Association of Police Chiefs agrees with me. But I will admit that any gun can be dangerous, and any gun can be safe. But for these people that are out there saying guns don't kill people, people kill people, that's nonsense.
Well, you know? It's kind of like, and I don't know if you see this argument, that people say, you know, this whole like campaign in New York City and among other groups to stop people from buying, you know, 25 ounces of Coca-Cola, you know, for 99 cents and how it affects your health. People don't want to be told what to do. And I mean, and especially when it comes to your gun, people don't want to be told that they have to do this with it and that with it and has to be locked up. I mean, I think it makes sense with children. I don't know what the purpose is if it's got it locked up, no ammunition in it, you know, and someone's going to intrude in your house. I am not sure how that even, you know, helps you. So
well,
maybe why do you have it?
I got to tell you that the Supreme Court agreed with you. They said that it violated your right to protection under the Second Amendment because of the things you just said, that you know, if you keep the ammunition in one drawer and the gun in another, it doesn't serve any purpose. And I think that's pretty much what the court decided. But, you know, I think we worry, or at least I worry, about all the children that get killed with weapons by accident. And, you know, having responsible gun ownership. I think that's what we want, responsible gun ownership. So these people, for example, that say guns don't kill people, people do. Well, I got news for you. Cars don't kill people, people do. No car rolls out of the driveway and accidentally rolls over somebody. One in a million.
I'm saying never.
Bad drivers do it. But you know what? You have to have a registration. You have to have a license to show you know how to use it. And you have to have insurance. And if you had to have a registration, a license proving your proficiency with the weapon, and insurance on that weapon, you could have any damn kind of gun you wanted, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the key, and that helps people who feel that they want to be able to have as many guns and whatever to protect themselves that they need. And we've already established that there's lots of places in the United States that are very different and unique from one another, and you can't apply the same set of rules to those areas, like rural Arizona or, you know, urban areas like D.C. and New York City.
Yeah.
So, we agree on that, right?
Right. And I think that was one of our problems, my problem with the whole Heller thing, and I stood in front of the Supreme Court and protested, was not so much that they were overturning a gun law in the District of Columbia, but that the National Rifle Association and all these people, of all the people that came out to protest that day, not one of them was a Washingtonian. They were all, Heller was a Washingtonian, the guy that brought the lawsuit. But all these people that were standing in front of the Supreme Court with me were from Virginia and Maryland. And that's the problem that I had. I have a problem with other people telling the people of the District of Columbia that they have to have certain gun laws.
All right. So that is really kind of a reflection upon the residents of D.C. because they don't seem to come out. Maybe because they can't connect with the issues or think that they have any power or any voice, and maybe that's a whole part of statehood. But I think that's like the thing that we saw, that once people, if you talk to one another, you can come to an agreement, whether it's you're going to disagree or that you do find something that you can connect and agree upon is a huge step. So I don't know. You know, I think for 2014, what I would hope is that people would get off the games on Facebook and other stuff, and maybe even off Facebook and their emails, and maybe like once a week attend a PTA meeting, or once a month PTA meeting, or if you don't want that, you don't have kids, go to a city council meeting. And if you don't like your city, then go to a county supervisor's meeting. But start getting involved in what's happening in your neighborhood and your region and your state and your town, because I mean, even especially in small towns, I mean, people are passing laws that impact you, affect you in every which way. And I would say that 99% of the population has no clue what is being done. So
right.
It's your money. These people work actually for you, the taxpayers. And why people don't want to get involved and say, hey, this is a way, you know, I think I want you to vote. This is how I want you to represent my issue. But get involved and follow it through, because it's amazing. You elect these people maybe by 30-40%, and yet nobody follows through and makes sure they do their job. So, you know, I think we're to blame a lot for the for people thinking that politics is such a dirty business to get into. I don't know any other business that you should – I mean, if anything, you should be involved in your local politics. You should be involved in the laws that set the way you live. I can't understand why people and that attitude – keeps good people from going into it to run, and it's very difficult. I mean, it really is a tough situation, but the only people are going to be able to change is us, so we have to make a difference. We have to try, and I hope that's what we do in 2014.
Well, you know, I think that's very true, and I think that part of the problem is people don't understand how this affects their lives, and they really don't get up in arms about something until the law's been passed. And it that makes it tougher, you know. Once the building permits have been issued for the 30-story building that they're going to build in your backyard, then your only recourse is to go through the courts to try to stop it, and that's more difficult. You need to get involved with the Planning Commission when they first have their public hearings, and three people show up for the public hearing. You know, once the building starts to go up, 200 neighbors show up. But at the beginning, when you could have input into the process, that very often doesn't happen. And you also have to look for legitimate sources to get your information. If you're on the NRA mailing list, don't get your information about guns from the National Rifle Association, because they're only telling you what they want you to hear. You need to listen to both sides of the argument. We've heard ridiculous things. Somebody told Kathleen that the post office is stockpiling weapons. Why would the post office stockpile weapons?
Well, that's exactly what the problem was. I don't believe that they don't either. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist or whatever you call them, but I can see that happening. And why not? I mean, that would be kind of the thing. I mean, people feel that the government is going to come knock down your door and take your guns. So who better than the post office guy?
The post office?
The mailman.
They deliver stuff. They don't confiscate stuff. It's ridiculous.
They're stressed out. They kill each other all the time. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's on a personal basis. Look, if you were going to give guns to somebody, the Marines are stockpiling guns. Okay, I might believe that. The Coast Guard, the Army, the Navy,
the IRS,
the Boy Scouts, but not the Postal Service.
Hey.
They're not. You know, but people believe this stuff. They do. They believe.
There has got to be somebody in the audience who can call and you know, kind of give the other side so Michael doesn't just think it's from me because he thinks I'm crazy, even though I'm very sane. And please call in to 888-429-5471. Because there's also always the story that government is stockpiling on ammunition. It's very hard to get. You know, even to make your own bullets, the stuff that you need is just getting very, very difficult to buy them anywhere.
And look, if there's anybody out there, I'd be willing to pay good money to anybody out there that might have evidence that Kathleen is not crazy, because I've known her for a long time and I think she is. And if there are any psychiatrists out there that can give an opinion one way or the other, please call us at 888-429-5479.
Yeah, well, they say association is part of the problem. So if you associated with me this long, you must think I have something to say that is a valid thing. Because, you know, otherwise, why do you have me on your show? Because I argue with you, I guess.
I don't know. But that's a perfect segue. Let's move from guns. And look, feel free to call in at any time. You know,
please.
If we're talking about something else and you want to talk about guns, call in. We'll talk about guns. That's really the idea of this show, is to get people calling and talking. And that's why Kathleen's on the show, because we don't agree on everything. And if we did agree on everything, it not only would be boring, but it wouldn't be productive. You know, my father used to say you can never learn anything from somebody that agrees with you. You can reinforce a belief, perhaps. But if you want to learn something new, you need somebody with a different opinion. So if you've got a different opinion out there, call in. Let us hear what you have to say, because we'd like to know what it is.
Walk a mile in my shoes, as they say.
Yeah. If you can walk a mile in
my high heels,
then you'll get the Shadow Politics Award for 2014. But now that we've talked about a little about guns, let's talk about some of the other things that we've talked about. And you know, of course, the most basic issue for us on this show, one that we turn to a lot, is statehood for the District of Columbia. And just to let you know what's going on with that, we have a bill in both houses of Congress. In the House of Representatives, we have 64 co-sponsors. It's called the New Columbia Admission Act. And in the House, I'm sorry, in the Senate, we have 10 co-sponsors. That's where we stand on statehood right now. We're pushing heavily on this bill, trying to get it passed. And the reason we want to be a state in the District of Columbia, if you don't know, is that the district was formed and under Article 1, Section 8, we're the only jurisdiction that was formed by the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution gives the right to Congress to create all laws in the District of Columbia. And in 1801, what the Congress thought they would do in their infinite wisdom was take away the rights of the people of the District of Columbia. So we don't have a voting member of the United States Senate. We don't have a voting member of the House of Representatives. We don't have control over our own local tax money that we raise, and we don't have control over our own legal system. And we're the only American citizens that can say that. And worse yet, We're the only citizens of the world that can say that. No other country does this to the people that live in their capital city. And the way to resolve this for the District of Columbia is to become a state. And the reason for that is that we don't have to change the Constitution for that, because the Constitution goes on to say in the same clause, which we call the District Clause, that the district can be no larger than 10 miles square, but it can be as small as we want. So what would happen is that the district, all the federal buildings in the district would be shrunk, the size of the district would be shrunk down to all the federal buildings in the district, and they would remain in the control of Congress, and all the surrounding area where 630,000 loyal Americans who pay taxes, who fight in wars, who die in wars, who serve on federal juries, would be given the same rights as every other American citizen. And you know what, America? It's time. So write your congressman, call your congressmen or senators, I'm sorry, your representative or senators, I hate to be sexist, and ask them to support the new Columbia Admission Act.
Okay, right there. I have to interrupt you. You got to get a better title than that. That sounds like a college entrance exam. You got to have something that says, you know, I don't know, statehood now. I mean, that has got to be the most boring title. No wonder people don't, like, they're like, what? What?
Well, that's the title that Congress uses. All those bills have titles like that. I'm trying to think of them. You know, like the laws that deal with guns. They're not called the "let anybody buy any kind of damn weapon they want" law.
That would be the name of your law.
The protection of the Second Amendment under Christ.
How about freedom for District of Columbia residents or something? But I wrote it down because it's like so. The new Columbian admissions test. Do people even know what is that? What you're going to call yourself, Columbians?
New Columbia.
New Columbia. I was going to say, because is that an already name taken by a country or something? You know, and you call yourself. So you're going to have to go, I'm a new Columbian. Why can't you just? I don't know. Got to think of something different there. I think that's part of your problem. Why you got to get people motivated? I mean, if you're going to sit out there, go, you know, come and support the new Columbian admissions test.
Act.
Okay. There you go. And,
well, you could also say support S-132, which is the bill number.
How about support statehood?
Support statehood. If you say support statehood, I think your representative or your senator will know what you mean.
I think that's
what you say. But you know, every bill in Congress has a technical. They call it a short title. I forget what the long title is. It's probably twice as long. But
admissions just doesn't not sound like the right word.
They want to admit us to the union.
I know, but you got to look up and find a different word for that. And I think I really do. I mean, it's the simple things that get people motivated to understand what the issue is. See, I know now I can see how you're looking
about,
at me.
I
can see how you're looking at me over here. Thank God I don't have to look at you all the time.
How about the Stop Treating Us Like Third Class Citizens Act?
There you go.
It would be more descriptive. Well,
or stop treating us like the slaves that you don't have anymore.
Rachel, if you're out there listening, take a note to call Eleanor Holmes Norton tomorrow and say we need to change this to the Stop Treating Us Like Third Class Citizens.
Exactly.
All right. But that's where we stand on statehood, and we need your support. And, you know, the people in the District of Columbia not only deserve to be treated like equal citizens, because that's the way our country's set up. It's also just crazy that of all the people we exclude the ones that are involved in making policy and working for public interest groups and doing the kind of things that we encourage citizens to do. We're very active in the District of Columbia. You know, this to me is like telling the people of Detroit that it's okay for them to build cars, but they can't drive them. So.
Well, let me just say also, I think the one thing, and we've talked about this before, is that if your city council is not behind statehood, then what chance you've got? And that's what I think that the residents of D.C. need to make sure that their city council, you guys are having a lot of an election, right? Because I see all the signs coming up. And I think that should be one of the first things that people ask of the people who are running. Do you support statehood? Yes or no?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think you should be elected to public office in the District of Columbia if you don't support statehood, because it's such a basic issue for us that we should have the same rights that everybody else has. And, you know, there's no disagreement inside the District of Columbia. So you have Republicans that support this. You have the Democratic Party supports it. The Green Party supports it. You know, the Libertarian Party supports it. There's no political group. I mean, certainly there are some people inside the District of Columbia that probably don't support it. But as groups go, every major political group in the District of Columbia supports this.
Hey, look at the time, how fast it goes. So
you know what? We're going to play a special song for New Year's and take a short break so that I can walk across the line and slap some sense into Kathleen.
Filed for a shotgun, you know. I just registered for my shotgun.
First, we're going to check and see if she has her gun with her or not. We have a short – we're going to take a short break, and we're going to play a special New Year's song for you. So we'll be back in a few minutes. And we're back, and I've talked some sense into Kathleen. Now she agrees with everything I've ever said.
Oh, no, don't lead him down that road. We're trying to start fresh in 2014. We're honest. We're strong enough to be honest is what I like to say. So we're going to talk also the thing I think that we got a big reaction on when we started the show is on the whole issue of college loans. And at one point, remember that there was a possibility of raising the interest to 6%. 6.34, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah.
And we had followed with Elizabeth Warren had introduced, which was a really, really good plan for college students. Because if we can loan money to the banks as a government, at what is this? It was
it's
one.
It's like half a percent. It's less
half
than
a percent, right? And
it's called
we
the discount rate.
And we can't do that for college students. It's just I don't understand. I do not want to give banks loans, period. But if we're going to give them that at that interest rate, we should at least give college students the same ability to start fresh, to be able not to have a huge debt and become productive, you know, citizens instead of citizens that are in debt up to their ears and almost basically a prisoner. They can't change jobs. They can't be creative. They got out of the box because they have to worry about paying on these loans right away. Or it's like the IRS. They'll take everything away from them.
Well, you know, and it should be done for the same philosophy. You loan money to banks so that they can loan it out, so that they can stimulate the economy. Well, that's why you give people jobs, too, because unemployed people don't buy anything, you know, except the absolute necessities that they need. They're a drain. They're a burden on government. Let's get people working and vested in the system. And if you want to put kids through college, let's make it easy enough for them to do it. I had dinner the other night with a very, very dear friend of mine who's an oncologist, and she told me that it cost her $3,300 a year to go to medical school when she was in medical school.
What year was that?
Well, this is a woman that's in her early 50s. So we're not talking about 30 years ago. We're not talking about you know, anything ancient wasn't even 30 years ago, 25 years ago. And it cost her $3,300 a year. I think it you'd be lucky to find a medical school under $100,000 a year these days.
Absolutely. And I guess this is the one thing I was asking you, what when the law was passed, that what they were going to do is going to keep it, explain to the audience what happened. It's like it's the interest rate is being held at the Stafford loan, you know, this whole thing. You know, we talked about it earlier. Take it away. You that, were explaining
that,
it to me.
Well, that the loan is tied to the Treasury 10-year average Treasury right. note, and then it's frozen. So it doesn't adjust every year. It adjusts when you get the loan. So if you get the loan and the average rate for Treasury bills was for interest on Treasury bills was 4%, then that's what it is, and that's what it is for the extent of the loan. But if you have to take a loan in graduate school after you get out of undergraduate, I think that doesn't apply. I think that it goes up. And if parents want to take a loan for their kids, it's at a higher interest rate than the students. And that's just crazy. Why, if I want to put my kid through college, why should it cost me more to borrow the money than it would cost him to borrow the money? And let me tell you, my son, who's in college now, I have two kids in college, but my son is 18 years old, and I can tell you that I'm a lot more credit worthy than he is. So right. It's just crazy to charge parents more. It's also crazy to tie it to this fluctuating rate. We need to go, you know, kudos to Senator Warren of Massachusetts for doing this and getting a more reasonable bill passed. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done on college loans. We need to get that down. We need to make it easy for kids to go to college and get a decent education and become
better. Well, you know, her original bill was to they would freeze it for 1 year at 3.4%. Then they would take that year to eliminate any – to figure out how the government profits from the student loan program and to eliminate it, and then to reduce the burden of student debt on existing borrowers by letting them refinance their loans during this period of historically low interest rates, and then looking for some bankruptcy relief, restoring basic consumer protection, and those kinds of things. And she's still going to try to put that in motion in the next year. And I would say to everybody who has a college – who has children, or maybe even yourself, still paying off your college loans, or if you went to get a master's, that you should call Elizabeth Warren's office and ask what you can do to help, you know, her wanting to actually, you know, like revitalize the program and see, you know, how they can make it better. And it should not be something that the government makes money off of. Because I think in the long run, they're going to get money from the taxes that are provided from the jobs that these students will work at.
Absolutely. And there is no reason why the government should make a profit on this. And that's the basic underlying principle on which Senator Warren has put this stuff forth. And I think she's absolutely right. And that we need to pursue a course where they're not making a profit on it. I mean, look, we built a stadium in Washington, D.C., so that the Nationals could play baseball. And I forget how many hundreds of millions of dollars it cost. But we built it on the basis that we were going to – the taxpayers paid for it because we were going to make all this revenue from the taxes that were paid on the tickets, on the food that was sold, on the parking, and all these other things. And so far, actually, it's been a pretty good deal. The area around the stadium has gotten better.
Right,
taxes
it sure has.
Have gone up. The district is doing well with this. Well, why can't we do that for students? If we can do it for a businessman, a multi-million dollar businessman.
Developer.
Who didn't need us to do that. There are a lot of cities that don't pay for stadiums. But
I must say that having come back, I think the last time I was here was about 5 or 6 years ago, I am shocked. At the area that I went in and got a kind of a tour from a friend of mine, and I couldn't believe it was the same place. This is a place you would not even take a taxi drive through.
Yes.
You just would stay away from it completely, you know?
So, So, and that's the main thing. You know, if there's one thing that we could get across to America, if there's one principle that we could convey to everybody that's out there, I think the single most important thing that we could make you understand is that we're all in it together. We're all in it together. This is about all of us. It's not about any one of us, you know. And people that criticize democracy and that criticize capitalism say that's the problem with it, is it all centers around one people, one person, and it pits people against people. But the truth of the matter is that to overcome that, there is a tendency in our democracy and in capitalism to do that. We need to see ourselves as Americans that come together over certain common core issues and work together. And those issues have to be more than just defense and providing. We need to provide economic stability. And we also have to understand the downside of that is that we pay for it. All. We pay for it all in the end. If you don't give a kid a decent education and he ends up in prison, well, it's going to, you know, he turns to a life of crime, let's say. It costs you a hell of a lot more to keep people in prison than it costs you to make sure they get a decent job and a decent education. And we are the number one industrialized nation in the world for locking people up.
Well, that's true. And I mean, a lot of these states have done these private contracts where they actually contract prison systems out. And I think in Arizona, where was it that I hear that the companies were going to sue the states because there weren't enough prisoners being provided to make them have a profit? So it's just a messed up way to do it, you know, to sit there and say, well, as a state, I have to produce so many prisoners to fill this prison that I've contracted out to because they have to make a profit. So I have to make sure that their cells are full. I mean, it's just crazy. I think that was happening in Arizona. You know,
I remember when computers, personal computers first became popular, there was this saying, garbage in, garbage out. You know, that you had to understand that if you didn't put data, I ran a direct mail program for the Democratic Party, and they would always tell us that if you put bad data in, you're not going to get anything but bad data out. And I don't know why we don't understand that in our society. If you don't invest on the front end, you're not going to get the result you want on the back end. You've got to invest in kids. You've got to invest in education, or you're going to have to invest in prisons, and you're going to have to invest in welfare.
I just want to tell the audience that we had a very intense discussion before. So that's why Michael is so riled up because I basically won and now he's excited and passionate. So he's more lively than usual.
I'm excited and passionate because I've had a lot of coffee because I've had to carry Kathleen around the District of Columbia. Kathleen, unfortunately, thinks that she's the queen of Arizona. So she comes in and she just tells, I need to be driven here. I need to be up there. I need to, you know.
Hey, I'm coming back to see people that I know and make sure that I stay in touch with them and feel the pulse of the other people in this place. So anyway.
So we have a call? We have a call? Yeah. Whatever group call is, put them on. Let's talk to them. Are you there? Oh, maybe not. No caller. Okay.
Okay. That was, see, you got excited.
I got excited. It's the coffee again. I'm switching to decaf until Kathleen goes back to Arizona.
Oh, I don't know where you saw that from, but that was pretty good. We got all excited over here. We all just group call. My goodness. So anyway, let's go on to the other thing that touches my heart as a woman is the ERA amendment. And when that was one of our first shows, and I was shocked because I did not know that that had never passed. I just assumed somehow that it had. I don't know where I got that from, but
I think everybody assumes that. And I've talked to lots of people about the issue since we had Carolyn on the show, who is the woman that that has pushed for the extension. And I think everybody's surprised. They go, didn't that pass? I mean, that's the first quarter's out of their mouth. Didn't it pass? And I think we all thought it passed. But, you know, that'll just show you, and this isn't necessarily a positive thing, but this will show you what one person can do. Because as a liberal, I have to admit that we were defeated on that bill by a housewife named Phyllis Schlafly from Indiana, who stood up and said, no, 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 no. So, you know, you can make changes or you can stop changes from happening. But it's about time that we recognize women as being equal. I mean, isn't this crazy that we don't do this?
Well, I'm surprised because I don't know how you can make homosexuals equal, how you can make African-Americans equal if you don't include women in it, because half of that group is comprised of women, at least, or say somewhat. So how can you make anybody other, any other interest group equal if you don't make women equal? And it was amazing that they have 35 states that have signed the ERA amendment, and you need 38. So they need three more states. And of the states that have not passed the ERA amendment, that's Nevada, Utah, and Arizona. Those were the south, were the western states. And then the others are mostly the southern states, Virginia, North and South Carolina, Florida, which surprises me, Mississippi, Louisiana, Missouri, Indiana, Alabama, Illinois, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Georgia. And, you know, I think she said that this year they're going to, don't they have to extend it every year, like pass some bill to
Every Congress. So every 2 years. And they've moved to a three-state strategy. I remember her saying that that's what they're trying to do, is to just find the three states and focus on three states that they can get to ratify so they have enough. But I want to read the Equal Rights Amendment to you. This is the entire Equal Rights Amendment. I mean, it's so simple, it's unbelievable. Section 1. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Section 2, the Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. And Section 3, the amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. That's all it says. All it says is that you cannot deny somebody something on the basis of equal.
We've got Taboo on the line.
Oh, I see. Okay, we'll talk to him in a second. But you can't deny anybody equal rights on the basis of sex. Congress has the right to enforce it, and states can't abridge it. I mean, how much more simple can we make it?
Well, I don't know, and it amazes me that we've just let this go. Like, you know, like nobody understands that. If it should pass, which it could happen that it just, the extension does not pass, you would have to start all over again. And right. So I think it was Scalia, Justice Scalia, that said that the Constitution does not protect women as it stands right now without that amendment. That's just the bottom line. So women need to get off their butts, and you know, husbands and fathers that feel that their daughters and wives should have equal protection, and they should say, come on, you know, if you live in these states, you should at least, you know, that could be an issue. Maybe you feel strongly enough to get involved in. And that's the key thing. You got to get involved in something. It's the only way we're going to be able to make a difference.
And if you had a mother, stand up for her. That's right. We have Taboo on the phone from Washington, D.C. Taboo, are you there?
Yes, I am. Happy holidays to all of you.
Happy holidays.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to ask a question about government and its controls, I guess. No one is above the law. Is that correct?
No individual. Yeah, I believe that.
Okay, then, is the government, can the government do anything it wants?
Well, in certain cases, certainly it can. Certainly it can. In things like eminent domain, where they can take your property for projects, you know.
Well, for the railroad, which is what they did.
Yeah, and certainly the IRS doesn't have to go through regular procedures to take your property, to seize your property.
And the
IRS is terrible sometimes. I mean, they've gotten better over the years, but if they seize your house and they sell it for half of what it's worth, and then they find out they were wrong, all they have to do is give you the money back.
Well, remember when the founders were setting the government, federal government up? Remember, they were concerned about this. They called the mob, you know, the democracy. That's why they wanted a Republican form of government. Right.
That's so, right.
Am I correct, Senator?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why the people of the District of Columbia don't have the right to vote. African Americans didn't have the right to vote. Women didn't have the right to vote. People that didn't own property didn't have the right to vote. Native Americans didn't have the right to vote because they were afraid of what the majority would do.
Well, you're right. But you see, it wasn't supposed to. Well, it was the pro-slavery people that wanted it like that. You know, George Mason didn't want it like that. George Mason originally said, when you're born, you know, you're born free, when he wrote the Virginia Declaration of Rights, and Jefferson copied after him. But then the pro-slavery people said no. So what we have today is the same, certain corrupt businesses, I should say, because businesses, the economy runs off business. We need it. But let's look at the values of many of our business people, you know, and when NAFTA and the banks. So,
yeah, you got no argument with me, Jeff, that the people on Wall Street, you know, we bail them out without thinking twice about it. And then we, you know, like Kathleen and I were talking about college loans. We don't give them appropriate loans. The only thing I would tell you is that you have to be careful when you take it out of context, because let's not forget that Thomas Jefferson said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. They're self-evident that all men are created equal. And this came from a man that owned slaves. So, there was somewhat of a dichotomy with these guys in their thinking, too. They just didn't
think of
African Americans as people. And that was the problem.
Right. So what we have, and so the question is, how do we straighten it out? We know the problems. So we know it's in the policies that's being made. So the question is, how do we straighten it out? And I think we need to look at our policymakers, and I think we need to look at redefine treason as well.
Well, I also, I was talking just a little bit at break that I think people have to, that are good law-abiding citizens, they're going to have to step up to the plate and make the sacrifice and run for their local, like, city council, for, state legislator, because unless we get people who have a sense of moral character and what's right and wrong, because I think the big problem with all this and why it's so corrupt is everyone's in it for their own agenda, and people have made politics seem like a nasty thing to get involved in with. To me, that's probably something that should be honored. Like maybe teachers is people who actually get involved to make the laws. I mean, it impacts us in every way, and why we don't become more involved in it and why we're so ready to say, oh, I'd just rather sit down on my couch, drink a beer and watch TV than get involved. I can't get it. I don't get it. I can't wrap my head.
Because a lot of times, Kathleen, they seem to say, well, look, we can do nothing about it,
and
pretty much it probably so. It's because of the way the government is not being run by its principles. I think that's the key to it all. I think if you can't just make any law you want, laws have to be based on certain principles, and that's not what's being done.
I agree with that too, Tabu. And I think, it's like I have this argument about term limits all the time. People say, well, we should have term limits. And I say, well, every congressman, every representative, every senator has a term limit. Every governor, you have a two-year term limit if you're a member of the House of Representatives. But we keep on reelecting these guys. If we don't like them, if they're not doing well, then it's our responsibility, well, by us anyway, it's our responsibility as citizens to stand up and make sure these guys don't get back to Washington. And, that's what Thomas Jefferson also said. He said the most important title in a democracy is that of citizen. So, we have a responsibility.
Yeah.
We want all the benefits of democracy, but lots of us don't want to take on the responsibilities. And, you know, you're somebody that I know, Taboo, and I will say that you're not one of those people. I see you out there standing up for lots of causes, and I think that if we had more people in the world that took their responsibility as a citizen, as if they took it the same way you took it, we'd have a better world. I truly believe that.
Well, I agree. Well, how do you think I feel when I see our children have to pay for college, and I see people coming from other parts of the world a lot of times getting free education?
Well, I agree with you. I know that there's this the small college where I was living, Cochise College, and they're giving scholarships to people in Mexico because they don't do a good enough job in marketing themselves to get kids in the United States to come. So they're doing that for students in Mexico. And that's my taxpayers' money being used. I'm not against helping people like in Mexico get an education. I think it benefits everyone, but as long as all the people that I know in the United States are being taken care of, then I think we can have the generosity spill over to other places. But I think it's ridiculous. It's kind of like it's a crazy national security issue not to educate your own people so that they can continue what we, you know, hold so to our hearts, which is a freedom and the ability to live in. I mean, we are a country that does not, I mean, we don't have chaos like most of the world does. And I think we don't understand how to appreciate what we have so that we don't want to let it go and we'll work for it.
And
well,
you know,
what about sending, when we send car manufacturing to Mexico and look at what happens to Detroit and everything else.
Right. You know, right. I don't know any other country that does that kind of stuff like us. I remember when Walmart was everything in there was American made. And you'd go there and you'd feel good about it. Now, I don't think it's very hard to find something that's American made because we've, you know, that's that whole global market thing, which I never liked. I think you have to take care of yourself and then you have the strength to be able to take care of other people. But if you take care of everyone else and leave yourself open and broke, there's not much place for you to be able to keep on going, being strong.
You know, when we're
one
putting up with this right now, Taboo, you know that there's a fight in the district over Walmart. That Walmart wants to come here. They want to put 6 stores in a 10-mile square area. They want to be part of our community. They came in, they all sang Kumbaya and hugged us and did wonderful things. And then we said, you have to pay a living wage. And what's the first thing they did? They closed down 3 stores.
Well, didn't they do, but they surprised them with that, didn't they, after they agreed to come in?
Yes,
and they said, oh, by the way, only you guys that are big box companies.
Them with that. And there are people that say that was the wrong thing to do. But you know what?
They weren't doing it to the targets. They weren't making it, you know. Okay,
no, they are. They are.
After 5 years.
No. All the big box stores.
Washington. But it wasn't that way at first.
They didn't single out Walmart. They singled out people that had a certain square footage, and
which
so would buy the
Walmart,
that Target, and Best Buy,
grandfather Target, and the other ones. And then the second bill that came through now is saying, "Well, we'll do it over 5 years, and it impacts everyone. Everyone's going to have to do that," which is the way it should have been done. But you know, you don't hold out the apple for them to eat from, and then we're going to change the rules on you now that you come inside. I'm not a fan of Walmart. Don't get me wrong, but I think that's where government makes the wrong decisions and why people don't trust them.
If you're out there at the Republican Party, please send Kathleen her membership card. We have to wrap up. It's the end of our show. Thank you, Taboo, for calling in if you're still there.
Thank you, Taboo. You're always a good guy.
Yeah, happy New Year to you. And we will be back next week, folks, with a new, exciting format.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.